Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. It's Monday, just gone 6 minutes after 10. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and you are listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. I'm joined in studio by our fantastic controller, Craig Guthries, my amazing producer, Sina Pabetsi, and we've got an incredible show for you today. We're chatting with Sarah Louise Walters, genetic counselor, and the subject of the conversation is going to be around to what extent is cancer genetic and how is this tested. So join us and let us have your questions on our WhatsApp number 061-895-1019.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show, and we are chatting to what extent is cancer genetic and how is it tested. And I'm joined by Sarah Louise Walters, a genetic counselor. Sarah, thank you so much for your time. We know it's early in the year. Everybody's getting stuff kicked off and trying to get 2025 sorted out. We really appreciate you joining us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, and thank you to your listeners. And I look forward to hearing what they've got to ask.
Absolutely. So we are going to be taking questions on 061-895-1019. That is our WhatsApp number. But let's start off firstly with what is a genetic counselor? And then we can get into the roles. What is the correlation with cancer and genetics? Are you at greater risk? Are you at lesser risk? We can touch on all of this.
Yeah, so that's often a question I get asked, because there are so few genetic counselors in the country. So what is a genetic counselor? So we medically trained scientific professionals who are registered with the HPCSA, just like all doctors are. And what we do is that we meet with patients, with families who either have got a genetic condition or are at an increased risk for a genetic condition in their families. And part of the process is looking at family history, the actual condition itself, and then possibly offering testing options and working out risks.
Right. So if we look at the risks with relation to sort of family history, what role, let's talk about the role actually that genetics play. Not, you know, are you exposed, you know, if you there's a family history, you're at greater risk. But what's the actual role that genetics play in our cancer risk?
The thing is that basically all cancers are genetic. Because what happens is that something goes wrong with the genetic information that will cause a cell to reproduce uncontrollably and therefore form a tumor, or, you know, depending on what the gene is, what influence it has on the body.
Okay. So,
but not all are inherited.
Okay. So let's chat about the difference, because that really was my next question. So, because you can expose yourself, if my understanding is correctly, to certain environmental factors that may lead to a mutation. And then also there's the inheritance risk. So for me, I'm adopted. So that's something also I wanted to chat about, because there's no genetic history there. So is there extra care that, you know, adopted people should be taking, or those who don't know family history? We can chat about that a little bit later. But I wanted to talk about the correlation, sort of mutation versus hereditary.
Okay, so it all depends on what cancer we're talking about as well. So we know that some cancers have not been shown to have a hereditary component, and that's the vast majority of cancers at this stage. So remember that, as far as genetics is concerned, we're still discovering things every single day internationally. Everybody's working on cancer genetics. But there are some cancers that we know have definitely got an inherited component. And the most common of these, I would say, the ones that we get consulted for are things like breast and ovarian cancer, hereditary breast and ovarian cancer syndrome, and the colorectal cancers. So those are the ones that we know have definitely got genetic components, and therefore other family members are at risk if there is a proven mutation in a particular gene.
Right. So if we're looking at there's that hereditary component, there is the risk. What is the step then for the kids? How old do you test? At what age? When do you start? Is it also obviously specific cancer related? When do we start looking at that? And then how does the genetic counseling come into play?
So with obviously, like you said, it does depend on the type of cancer because a lot of the cancers that are hereditary are what we call adult onset cancers. And therefore, if a parent has been proven to have a mutation that is causing a cancer, yet the cancer is only an adult onset cancer, we do not test children under the age of 18 because we need to have formal consent or informed consent in terms of to know what they are signing up for, really, in terms of how a positive result may impact on their growth, their development, their self-esteem, their job choices. There's so many different components which we talk about in the genetic counseling session. We have had requests because a mom, for example, has had a hereditary breast cancer, and we've had requests for testing young children, and it's just not appropriate because it's not going to be affecting them as they grow. They would need to make that decision as an informed adult.
Okay. If there was a component, and we just heard this wonderful article in the news with the kids in pediatric cancer ward being brightened up. If there is a parent who had and is a pediatric cancer survivor, is there then an element of testing earlier on?
So that's a really good question. So my husband is a pediatric cancer survivor, and when we decided to have children, I went really deeply into having a look to see, is there something that we can test for? So like I said, it all depends on what kind of cancer it is and then what you can do about it. We have had early onset of, for example, colorectal cancers, where a teenager has been diagnosed physically with that type of cancer. And so siblings of that child would be at 50% risk of also inheriting the faulty genetics, if I can put it that way, and therefore screening for them for this cancer would start a lot earlier than what you would expect if it was just purely an adult onset.
Is it that so? I mean, there's wonderful support within the communities for those living with cancer, those who are surviving cancer, for parents who are not exposed or involved in that community. What support network is out there that they can reach out to and talk to? I'm thinking more on the lines of, being Jewish, we panic about everything. We live it with anxiety. We stress about everything. I'm not wanting to give parents anything extra to stress about, but who can they have a conversation with to put their mind at ease? Would that be the GP? Would it be reaching out to someone like yourself?
So the GP is always a good place to start, but they don't always have the information that is appropriate. So referring to a genetic counselor would be great. Genetic counselors are also in touch with lots of what we call support groups. And the main one, which is sort of the umbrella organization for support groups for different types of genetic diseases, is rare diseases. So I'm part of rare diseases. We rare diseases often does a lot of work actually for genetic conditions. But starting off with a childhood cancer and reaching out to rare diseases to see if there are other family members affected. And then if they're the hematological type of cancers, the blood cancers, then CHOC is a really good organization to reach out to as well. Many well-respected healthcare professionals who would be able to assist, to advise, and help look after your child.
Right. I'm very fortunate to know several cancer survivors, and they are truly amazing, powerful people, and they're passionate about helping those in the community, those who are dealing with cancer or parents and loved ones and so on. So I think there is tremendous support, but it's always the best then reach out to a professional. Is it something that people can Google? We can give your contact details out at the end as well. How would one get in touch with a genetic counselor?
So there is a genetic counselor website. It's GCSA. I've forgotten if it's org. But okay. It might be COZA.
Right.
I can't remember. I don't look myself up all that often. So GCSA would be helpful because that would give a list of all the genetic counselors that are working in the private sector, but also in the public sector as well.
Right.
So there are certain hospitals in the public sector, for example, Johannesburg Hospital, Groote Schuur Hospital, Red Cross Hospital, those types of places. So unfortunately, genetic councils are really sort of concentrated in the main urban areas, so not so many in the rural areas. But as COVID has taught us, we can reach anybody anywhere online, and most genetic counselors do offer online genetic counseling as well.
Okay, that's fantastic. If we're looking at those with the hereditary component, what are some of the environmental risk factors that people should be watching out for? So, you know, is there stuff that we need to do that's specific? Smoking, vaping, UV exposure, diet, environment. What are the things we should be looking out for? And, should you up your care level if you have a hereditary component or...
So it's all the things you mentioned, all the things that any good GP would tell you: to exercise regularly, to eat healthy, to and I think one of the main things that you didn't mention was stress management.
Yeah.
So we do know that stress management can play a role. It's, you know, and it's very hard for us to pinpoint exact environmental factors. But obviously, if you can avoid certain environmental factors, that would be better. But sometimes, you know, depending on the cancer as well, is that the risk can be much higher depending on the cancer, depending on which gene is involved. So yes, all the things you mentioned that we all know and we don't always do, but it is New Year, so maybe there are some New Year's resolutions happening.
So I'd actually like to touch on a little bit more of those. We're going to go to a live read and some ad breaks, and then when we come back, let's drum this in to our listeners, the things to take care, maybe also focusing potentially on smoking and vaping. So the things I'm up against. All right. Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics for Adults offer convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's Monday, just gone 21 minutes past 10. You are listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and I'm chatting to a wonderful expert. Been loving this conversation, Sarah Louise Walters, genetic expert. We're chatting about genetic counseling and cancer, and what are the genetic relationships to cancer? What should you be watching out for. And now we're going to chat about a couple of environmental factors and a couple of things that I'm very passionate about. Let us have your questions on 061-895-1019. So, Sarah, just before we went to ad break, we were talking about the environmental factors that we all know. It's funny you mentioned stress management. I think we're all realizing how impactful the stress of where we live can be, particularly coming back from vacation. I spent quite a few days in the garden route in Knysna and in Hermanus, and then you come back to Joburg and it's like, wow. And then what I like to do is go away early in the month, because then I get eased back into Johannesburg picking up. But I think stress is such a big factor. But let's touch on smoking and vaping. And the reason I'm so anti-smoking and vaping is I spent 15 years in insurance and working with underwriters. And you could just see the underwriters' faces. You know, if there was alcohol involved, there was drinking, that compounded. Mm-hmm. And then smoking compounded. And then lifestyle compounded. But smoking and now vaping just multiplies the risk factor exponentially. And so let's touch on how bad is this if there's a family history and you smoke or you vape?
So just, you know, looking at lung cancer itself, we know that smoking is related to many cancers, mouth cancers, esophageal cancers, lung cancers. And these are not necessarily inherited types of cancers. So this is purely because of behavior.
Yes.
And hopefully, like I said, new year, new behavior. So even if there is, or if there are inherited cancers in the family, they might not necessarily be related to the lung cancers that we're seeing. Mm-hmm. So we know that smoking causes DNA damage, and that's the crux of cancer, is that there's DNA damage. Now, just in general, our DNA gets damaged every day, all the time. We walk out in the sun, we're exposed to pollution, we have pesticides on the food that we eat. Mm-hmm. So we are exposed to DNA damage all the time. But luckily, just like a car mechanic, our bodies have what we call a DNA repair mechanism, which comes along and fixes that DNA. But if the DNA does not get repaired properly, then that can potentially lead to a cancer. So it's about looking after ourselves as best as possible, avoiding factors that would potentially cause DNA damage as much as possible, and then hopefully avoid getting a cancer.
Yeah, and I think sometimes with the risk factors that we're exposed to, if it's, as an example, in earlier life, even when we stop, we can still carry that extended or increased risk with us through the rest of our lives.
There will definitely be, even from childhood, where there has been some type of cancer, there's always going to be an increased risk for cancer as a person grows older. And it's because the cancer happened in the first place that there's this predisposition to getting another type of cancer. And some of our cancers are quite related to each other as well, in terms of inheritance or in terms of what types of cancers develop as an adult. So it might not necessarily be the same cancer as what happened in childhood. So definitely living in the glorious weather that, although not today, the glorious weather with the sunshine, we're more at risk for basal cell carcinomas, for melanomas, those types of things, which melanomas are related to other types of inherited cancers as well. So you might not think about, there's a family history, say, for example, of breast cancer, and then you're at an increased risk for melanoma. How does that work? But the genes are telling us that this is where the genetic information is used, and therefore increases the person's risk if you have a particular gene that is involved in causing those cancers.
Right. Okay. So if we chat about the mechanics of what you do, what a gene counselor does. So someone has a family history of cancer. Firstly, should they consider genetic testing? Again, is that based on the type of cancer? And if they are going to go for a genetic test, what is the process? And then what is the counseling around that?
So So, yes, it does depend on the cancer. I would recommend that if there's a family history of cancer, not only just a family history, but a family history of a young age of cancer, a family history of a bilateral cancer, for example, both breasts are involved in in primary cancers, or a breast and an ovary are involved in cancer. And then what I want to stress as well is that sometimes cancers are inherited through the male side. So even though you're not seeing maybe a lot of breast cancers, but it's on your father's side, or you are seeing breast cancers, but it's on your father's side, don't think that males can't get breast cancer, because they do. Their risk for actually developing cancer might be less than females, but they can certainly carry a gene that is faulty that will cause breast cancer and put their children at risk. So those are the types of things that we look out for: early onset, bilateral disease, and unusual cancers in a family as well. And so when a person comes for genetic counseling, we, instead of just going straight for the test, because we do get a lot of types of requests for certain cancers, but it's not always the appropriate test. So we have to take a lot of factors into consideration. So doing a family history, at least a three-generation family history, is really helpful. And if people can come with the history of the family, what was the age of diagnosis, what was the actual cancer, are there any genetic reports that anybody has of an affected individual in their family, those are so helpful to us, because it can help guide which is the appropriate test. So we take family histories, we have a look at what is happening in the family, and then we suggest on which is an appropriate test for this particular family. So looking at people from Ashkenazi Jewish background, we know that there's an increased risk for breast and ovarian cancer just based on that population. So, and there are three particular changes in particular genes, BRCA1 and BRCA2, that we know are particular for people from Ashkenazi Jewish descent. So if we had a person from another population group, for example, we wouldn't necessarily be looking specifically for those that we find common in the Ashkenazi Jewish population, but it doesn't mean to say that they can't have one of those. So with people who are not Ashkenazi Jewish, we tend to look more broadly in terms of what are we looking for. So I'm from English descent, so looking for Ashkenazi Jewish related types of mutations in me is really not going to be helpful. I've got a risk of colon cancer in the family, so there's no particular population groups that are more, prone than others. So what do we recommend? We recommend screening from the age of 50. As pleasant as it might be, going for a colonoscopy every 3 years or so is from the age of 50 for anybody is recommended. So So what we do with that, we recommend a type of testing. We assist them with the testing. The testing, it's just a blood sample, as horrible as it might seem, but it's only like a teaspoon of blood. It's not like half your arm full of blood, just a teaspoon of blood. And we extract DNA from there, and then depending obviously which gene we're looking at, we run it on equipment that we are sequencing to look for every kind of mutation that we can look for in particular genes.
So you just, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, and then I was going to say, then what happens is that we then feed back to the family as well. So we feed back to the patient saying, yes, you're at an increased risk, or no, we didn't find anything. So therefore, your risk goes back to the population risk. So depending on the types of cancers, we also know that there are different risks in the population just in general.
So that's something that I want to touch on, sort of that next step. But you just made me think of something where a couple of years ago, and I suppose it's still relatively popular, these sort of genetic tests where you can do your ancestry testing and check and find families. Is that something that's actually quite useful, where you can connect to family members and then, are there sort of family history records that are available with cancers and other diseases?
Not as far as I'm aware, because obviously, because of Poppy, we need to be careful about the information. We do have a cancer registry in South Africa, but really, it would be from within the family to find out as much as possible as from what they can. You know, ancestry testing really goes back many thousands of years, so you can find out if you Irish descent or
one part Cherokee Indian,
you know, all of those types of things. So that's not really helpful in terms of inherited genetic cancer genetic syndromes.
So but there are some that do put you then in touch with family, sort of you have the option to connect with family members that are sort of coming through the genetic sequencing. So I think that might be an opportunity.
Yes, so, there are. There are definitely some of those. I know one of my family members has done it, but just a caution is that if you are considering doing some type of ancestry like that, remember that the company who is doing your genetic sequencing has now got all of your genetic information.
Right, yes.
And they can do with it what they want.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
It's a big red flag for us in the genetics community saying, who are you giving your genetic information to?
And, you know, that could be going to insurance companies, to anyone really for profiling. So it's that's a very,
we don't know.
Very good point. So, right. I suppose it's not really a question to ask, but were there companies that you would trust? Or is it something we should just completely leave by the wayside for this conversation?
I'll leave that up to you to decide. but what I would say is that we concentrate on diagnostic testing or families that are at risk. And it's very particular information. So we don't do sequencing for the whole genome. We're just looking at the particular gene or genes that are relevant to what is going on in the family history.
Right. So when the patient goes for the tests, and what are the different results that you get back, sort of at risk or not at risk, or could it pick up that there is something wrong?
So the types of results that come back now, the international standards have just changed all the classifications of how genetic faults are classified. So results will come back as pathogenic or likely pathogenic, which means that there is a change within a gene that has the ability to cause cancer. Which gene it's in then will then determine what the risks are.
Right.
Sometimes we get benign or likely benign variants, and that means that they are not related to the cancers or they're not causative of cancers. And then sometimes we get back what we call variants of uncertain significance. And what that means is that there's not enough information worldwide yet to know whether this can contribute to cancer or not.
Okay.
So that, unfortunately, for the moment, until more information is available worldwide, we have to park it and say, just do your normal screening, go for your mammograms every second year, go for your pap smears, go for colonoscopies, have your prostate checked. Sorry, all of you men over 50, do the prostate checks. I know they always grimace at me when I tell them that they should have been doing prostate checks already.
Yeah. And I think also for guys, there was a blood test that we were supposed to have done when we were much younger, sort of in our 30s and 40s, or to set a baseline, if I remember correctly. Or no, am I getting that wrong?
No, I don't know which one you're talking about.
So a physical prostate test or a blood test for prostate?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
Should be doing both. Okay. Yep. Oh boy. All right. So we'll carry on with this now as soon as we are back from our ad breaks.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
It's Monday and it's just past 10, just gone 10:40 on the dot. You're listening to 101.9 High FM. It is the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. We're chatting with Sarah Louise Walters, genetic counselor. We're talking about the correlation, the link between genetics and cancer. So hereditary cancer, what are our predispositions? What should we be looking out for? We're talking about what a genetic counselor does. What role do they play in preparing us for the genetic testing and what needs to be done, and who really should be looking out for the risk of, or who is more at risk rather, of cancer, the specific types of cancers affecting the Ashkenazi community. Those are the rectal colon cancers, the ovary and breast cancers, and if there's a family history on the mother's side or on the father's side. That's something that I found quite interesting, that if on the dad's side there is a family history of ovarian cancer, of breast cancer, that's something that still needs to be taken into account for daughters and for girls in the family. And just the testing over the age of 50 for men, that prostate cancer check, and just making sure that we know really where we stand with breast checks, also every 2 years. It's about preparing ourselves and empowering. I think that's something really that we discuss so much on the show, is about patient empowerment, you know, knowing your rights, making sure that you're not really surprised. And it's not around building or developing anxiety or increasing anxiety, you know, with having to go for hundreds and hundreds of tests. It's just about making sure that you know where you stand, minimizing your risks, maximizing your knowledge and the information that you have available to you, whether that's what you need to do, what you shouldn't be doing. We touched on that as well with regards to smoking and vaping, stress management, environment, food. We're under all of this pressure. We've got all of these toxins around us in the air, in the water, in our food. We need to make sure that we're giving our body the maximum opportunity it can to fight the mutations that cause cancer. So let us have your questions on our WhatsApp number, and that's 061-895-1019, and we will get Sarah Louise Walters, genetic counselor, to answer them for you.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
We're chatting with Sarah Louise Walters, genetic counselor, on the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. And before we went to ad break, this is me getting, I was like, what were we talking about?
Good question.
Absolutely. So I think we were just touching on sort of, you know, what are the tests that we can are happening? What's the process? So if someone comes back with a very serious risk, what are the steps that are followed?
So the, you know, getting what we would generally call a positive result, mm-hmm. would mean that the person would be at an increased risk for developing a certain type of cancer. So depending on the type of cancer, depends on what is available in terms of going forward. So obviously, more often, screening more often for the type of cancer. So whether it be colonoscopies every year or mm-hmm. every 6 months, whether it be breast examinations, mammograms, MRIs, those types of things, those are all a possibility. Especially with the breast and ovarian cancers, there is an option for surgery to mm-hmm. and the reason is to remove the tissue that is most at risk. It basically, you know, a double mastectomy does bring your risk down to close to zero, if you've had a double mastectomy done. Removing ovaries after the age of 35 and when the family is finished is also an option for surgery. But it all depends on the personal point of view. So we talk through all the different options and to see what fits best with that person, with their personality, with their relationships, with their mm-hmm. personal choices. So that is a very important part of the next step in terms of what do you do.
So just to touch on that point, how have you found it? And obviously not asking you to share any specific patient details, but from my experience and knowing people within our community where there has been incidents of breast cancer with grandmothers and with mothers, and where the young girls are growing up seeing their moms sick and suffering and not well, where the discussion around a double mastectomy or the removal of ovaries comes in, do you find that they're more open to that, that there's a greater sensitivity and understanding?
It really depends on the family and the circumstances and the personality of the person that you're talking with, because some do, you know, some people who have helped to care for the person who is so sick, they are absolutely adamant that they don't want to go through that and they want the surgery. And in other cases where they have also been caring for the person who is ill, they're absolutely adamant that they're going to hold on to their body parts as long as possible. And it's so individualized.
Right.
And that is the whole point about the counseling, is that, you know, there's not one set rule for this type of experience or that type of experience. Some people walk into the office and they say, I want a double mastectomy. I'm like, whoa, hold on. Let's start at the beginning here. So some people have done a lot of reading. Some people see what Angelina Jolie's done and think that this is maybe the best option. But the counseling is so individualized that we talk through the pros and cons of all of the screening, the preventative surgeries, all of those types of things, so that they can, you know, and often they don't decide during the counseling session, which is fine, because they want to talk to a partner, to a sister, to anyone, you know, who are their support system.
Right.
And possibly even other people who have been through both experiences.
How long does the counseling last? Is that patient specific? I mean, how many sessions, as an example?
Usually it's just one session in terms of pre-test counseling and then one session post-test counseling. So it's short-term genetic counseling. And if we feel that the family or the individual needs longer term therapy, we rather refer them on to a clinical psychologist who would be able to deal with the issues longer term. So we really deal with the genetic consequences. Sometimes we do, some families I've seen quite a few times over. It just depends what we're talking about. And it's their preference, their choice.
Okay. We're going to go to an ad break. And when we're back, I want to talk about people who don't know their family history and people like me that are adopted. So there's no knowledge of what of where we're coming from.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
As we start wrapping up the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM, we are chatting with Sarah Louise Walters, genetic counselor. And just as we start to wrap up the show, I want to touch on the what do adopted people do and those with sort of no knowledge of family history. But I just wanted to go to a quick question from Carol Z. She's saying, you know, she doesn't know if it's pertinent, but genetic therapy with regards to cancer treatment. So I'm not sure what genetic therapy is or if it's something that we can talk. Sorry, excuse me, I completely misread that. Hormone replacement therapy.
Yeah, wow. There's been lots of debate about hormone replacement therapy. Yep. I was racking my brain there in terms of genetic therapy. But there is such a thing as genetic therapy. So if I can just touch on that quickly, when someone has been diagnosed with a particular type of cancer, genetic testing of the tumor tissue is very helpful in guiding doctors in which medication, which treatment regimen is going to be the most effective for them. So genetic testing can be done on the tumors themselves, and that can often be helpful for the oncologists or the radiologists or whoever they are. Hormone replacement therapy has been a bit of an up and a down, because at the beginning, when we first thought about hormone replacement therapy and an inherited type of breast cancer, for example, it was deemed not advisable to use hormone replacement therapy when having a genetic mutation that may cause a cancer. However, subsequent studies have proven that it doesn't really matter. And subsequent studies are saying, well, then it depends on what type of hormone replacement therapy is used.
Okay.
So I do find that if someone does know that they have a gene change, an alteration and a cancer predisposing gene, then that would need to be discussed with their doctor, and hormone therapy may or may not be advisable.
Okay, fantastic answer. Thank you. Right, adopted people, well, those with no history, right? What should we be doing?
You should be doing the normal screening.
Okay.
So you should be having your prostate checked from physical and biochemical, so having a blood test done. Mm-hmm. You should be, from the age of 40 or 45, you should be having a colonoscopy from the age of 50 every 3 years, unless anything suspicious is found. Self-breast examinations are recommended every month for women, and for men, I don't know if you know how to do a self-breast check. There's lots available on online to show you how to do a breast self-check. And those are the types of things that are recommended in terms of those particular organs that are at risk for cancers.
Okay.
So early screening, you know, women have the pleasure of going for a mammogram every couple of years ago or so, coupled with ultrasound is pretty good at picking up anything that may look suspicious.
Right. Okay.
So if you don't know anything about your family history whatsoever, I would think start with the basics, start with screening, have a look at what your medical aid offers in terms of screening, and follow the guidelines from the medical aids that say you can start having these kind of screening tests from this age.
Okay, perfect. What I wanted to finish the show on and wrap up with is, how valuable is the screening and early detection in terms of survival rate? How vital?
Life-changing.
Yeah.
It really is life-changing. The earlier you can pick something up, or the fact that you know that you're at a greater predisposition than the general population, it can be life-changing, because you can do things early. You can do things early, you can prevent, you have an increased awareness. You also have an increased awareness to pass on the information to your children and to your siblings and to your parents, your aunts, your uncles. You know, genetic cancers have a much wider implication than this. Just the individual themselves.
Right. That's such an important point. Actually, so just make sure you're speaking to your siblings.
Yes.
Just in case. So that's, you know, early detection is the key. Empowering yourself is the key. And it just improve. And I think it's not just about survival rate, right? It's about quality of life when dealing with the cancer. The sooner you pick it up, that can have a lower impact on your quality of life.
Right. And the treatment options may be easier or shorter or whatever the case may be, depending on the stage. So
absolutely fantastic. Sarah Louise Walters, genetic counselor, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate this information. I think it's such a wonderful way to start the year off. It can be a new New Year's resolution. You know, find out, you know, do the testing, do the research that you need to do, speak to you, and get tested. Yes. Thank you, Sarah, for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Fantastic. You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, the man pushing all the buttons, crazy Guthrie, the person putting the show together, Sina Pabetsi, our fantastic producer. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to chatting with you next week.